All right, guys, what's up? Zach Evanesh here, hooking you guys up with a little bit of a bonus audio for the Underground Strength Conference, the 2012 conference, and got my homeboy, Uncle Paulie Reddick, on the line. What's up, Paulie?
What's up, man?
And Paulie's website is at howtobetotallyawesome.com.
Yes, .net or .org as well.
Or .tv. Don't go away.
Yes.
Don't. 21 or older, .tv, not work family safe.
Yes. Hide your kids.
Yeah, hide your kids. Do that stuff in the privacy of your own home. So
right.
What we're going to do is we want to, we're going to, you know, pretty much free flow, freestyle. That's kind of the way we roll. And want to talk, though, about specific, I guess, business techniques, strategies, marketing stuff that's a little bit, or a little bit more detailed. It's the various speakers, you know, everybody spoke from an hour to an hour and a half, and you heard a lot, I guess, about how they do things, but a little bit, maybe some of the stuff may be a little bit general, so we want to give a little bit of detailed stuff. So the conference was a couple months ago, and actually going through the videos is, like, really emotional looking and, like, hearing, you know, all the stories that each of the coaches and the speakers are talking about. And since then, we've gone through our Navy SEAL challenge. So it was interesting watching Quattro Deuce speak, you know, about finding your why. So let's jump into this, dude. Since this is my interview, and since this is my bonus, I figured I'd ask you what you want to talk about. So no, let's talk about, you know, I think we've learned a lot of stuff just since the conference. We've changed things within our own business. Let's just talk about maybe some big ideas and kind of detail them a little bit and give people how tips on how they could use it just to better their own business, better their lifestyle, and so on.
Well, yeah, the one thing of the guys that I
next question.
Like, that's really interesting. Okay, that's great. Now, let's
yeah, that one was awesome.
Moving on. The guys that I spoke to from the conference, and I spoke to, like, after I spoke and stuff like that, the biggest thing that I got questions on was the frequency of contact, like email and marketing messages that I kind of suggested that these guys do. And so a lot of them were kind of weary about, like, emailing every day or even upping their email from, like, once or twice a month even to more than they're doing. And one of the examples I probably should have gave on stage was that we're only looking at that from our perspective. So if we say, every email every day would be too much, I don't know, I'd be afraid to piss people off, or I'd be afraid that people would unsubscribe, or I'd be afraid that people would be turned off to the message. But all those statements start with your own fears of what possibly could happen. And more times than not, you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. What you should be looking at it from is the perspective of how the client perceives you. And just like, one of the things people said to me was that there's so much email out there already. People are getting a lot of messages. But, you know, at 7 a.m. every single morning across dozens of channels, there's morning shows. You know, ABC, NBC, CBS, Channel 5, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, they all have morning shows that are a cross between news, entertainment, sports, whatever, you know, and they all kind of have the same guest. It's a similar format, a guy and a girl talk for 5 minutes, and then they go into their guest, and then they do the news and all that kind of stuff. Just like there's radio shows across thousands and thousands of channels. But just like if we tune into one particular show, that show does something for us. And we can't ignore the fact that your email on that day might just be what that person's waiting for. And what that person wants, and they want to hear from you, even though the Today Show is on and Good Morning America is on, but maybe they want to watch, you know, I don't know what another one is, Morning Joe or something like that, which is another talk show. You know, it's all kind of who your base is and who your fans is. And just like at 11 o'clock at night or 11:30, there's multiple late night talk shows. So I think people need to understand that that instead of looking at it from your fears of marketing, look at it, number one, from that you might be exactly what your customer needs on that day, and that's why we're doing whatever we're doing, and also that you want to be there. You know, one of the things we take from other masterminds and stuff is that you want to be there when the problem you can solve hits the top of your prospect's to-do list. So Dan Kennedy tells, like, this famous story. Dan Kennedy tells this famous story about when he was selling Amway, of all things, right? He would actually go in and put the groceries away for the person because he wanted to see what was in their cabinet, you know, what they were buying and when they were buying it. And he was, this one woman bought soap from him all the time, and one month she didn't. And he went to put all her stuff away, and there was another brand of soap there, like dishwashing soap. And he asked, you know, what's the deal? And she's like, I just didn't want to bother you. I was out. I needed it, and blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line that Kennedy came back from was he could get upset with that, or he could say the reason why she bought that was because I hadn't communicated to her frequently enough that I had this and I was available and I could be there. So you just never know what your customers need. And I think that's a long kind of answer to the question of is what's too much marketing? Well, there isn't too much marketing. You know, for someone who's a fan of a music group or a fan of an author, there aren't too many books that author could write, or that, you know, musician albums they could make. And as silly as it sounds, people view us the same way. They do. And it's not on that extreme broad level with millions of people. But if it's hundreds of people that, can look at you, that way, and that being a local celebrity is in very much the same way of being a national celebrity. I often talk about this book that was out like 15 years ago. It was called Slut. And what it was about was the psychology of people in groups. And then one of the examples they used was the high school slut. That, you know, there was an additional benefit to being like the promiscuous high school girl. Girls gossiped about you. Boys wanted to be with you. When you walked down the hallway, people knew you and stuff like that. And the example they used was that, you know, Tom Cruise can walk down the street in any neighborhood in America and be recognized and people would crowd around him. But if you only walk down one hallway every day and you're famous in that one hallway that you walk down, it's the same thing. You know, so that's kind of a weird example to understand that to your base, let's say you even got a list of a few hundred people. But to those few hundred people, you could be the one. You could be the solution, the provider of the solution, or have a product or a service that's going to help them most. And you've got to be there all the time. And to your true fans, they couldn't get enough email from you. So that's a long, long answer to that one thing. But that was a question I got probably a dozen times seminar, and then on Facebook after.
That was funny.
One of the things I talked about.
Yeah, because I'm doing – even, guys, I want, you know, always remember that it doesn't matter how experienced or inexperienced you are. Like, that question even goes through my head. Like, this week I was just like, man, dude, I sent out the most kick-ass blog post. There weren't really any comments to it. I didn't see a whole lot of shares to it. So I was just like, you know, maybe my list needs a break, or they just maybe need to hear more and they need to get warmed up more and they need to hear kind of like more reassuring messages. It's like I could hop on the phone all the time with like certain friends and talk about certain things. So if somebody's talking, like my buddy Mark Bell and I, we always hop around the phone, we're always talking about training, always talking about, you know, all these different techniques that guys use to get stronger in different workouts. You and I were always talking about business and just ideas and lifestyle. So you're right, man. It's you know, it's something that if we want to influence people, we got to reach out to them on a regular basis. But you know, I think I'll tell you what else, dude, is I think sometimes people hear somebody say, I'll never email you guys more than once a week or more than twice a week, and that person might be very influential. But what we don't know is that those people probably have a lot of little, like you say in the Blue Man Group, a lot of blue men or a lot of affiliates promoting their stuff, promoting their blog posts. So in essence, their stuff is getting out, you know, on a very frequent basis.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, think about it like this, too. Like, what if, you know, like one of my favorite groups is U2. And what if I found out, you know, that U2 played like a concert at the Count Basie Theater, which is right by my house. And I found out about it after the fact because they hadn't emailed their New Jersey subscribers about it. I'd be pissed. You know, I would be pissed that they didn't let me know stuff that they were.
You'd file a lawsuit.
I'd be fired up. I'd be fired up. You know, but I mean, that's kind of like if you found out like your favorite author or something, or, you know, or like Arnold Schwarzenegger's on his book tour and he was going to be at the Manasquan Barnes and Noble. You know, if you didn't know about it, you'd just like, man, why didn't they email me about that? You know, I think the point you bring up too about the blog post is important is that you never know where somebody is on the scale. So maybe that blog post got their interest and maybe they're watching, you know, maybe they need a little bit more or maybe they need a different direct. You know, it's hard to tell sometimes what the list is thinking and stuff like that. But ultimately, the only way we can help people is if we get them into our product and service. So protecting a list of people because we don't like to see the size of the list shrink, that's just like a selfish, you know, fear thing that you just got to get over. You're here to, you know, it's funny. I was in preparing for upcoming mastermind that you're going to be at. I started looking at the real definition of words, you know, that we use. And one of the words that really blew me away, it took me like a day to really ponder it, was the word coach. You know, we are calling each other coach this, right? And the origin of the word coach was actually like a stagecoach, like a horse-drawn coach, you know, like a almost like a wagon.
Right.
And the definition is a coach transports you from one place to another. That was the original definition. It just kind of got morphed into coach. And it was actually like in Oxford University that they started using the word coach as someone who would guide people through their course at Oxford. And so I thought about that. I was like, as a coach, your job is to deliver people take them from where they are to where you know they need to go. And you can't do that unless you're talking with them, unless you're engaging them, unless you're drawing them into your service. And so you have to get them in. You have to, you know, and that's hard to do once a week or every other week or, you know, I had some guys that were emailing once a month, and you email once a month, you will definitely be forgotten about very quickly.
They'll spam you. Know, they'll think you're spam or.
Yeah, they won't remember. 30 days in today's is a lifetime, man. You know, we can remember what we were doing 30 days ago or what email list we joined 30 days ago. Nobody remembers that.
Yeah. Since we're talking about, you know, you said, okay, we don't know what they were thinking. We don't know where they are. If you're unsure of, you know, what people need, then one of the easiest things you guys could do is to survey people. And there's a lot of different ways you could survey them. you could get a free survey on surveymonkey.com, which is an online survey, and you could have them answer multiple choice questions, or you could let them answer it as kind of like essay format. Another way you could say is, hey, just reply to this email and tell me what you want me to create or what you'd like me to write about or what topics you want me to cover. You could do it as a blog post. At the time of this recording, you could go on Facebook and do a survey on your Facebook page. I'm not sure if you could do it on a profile page. On a fan page, you can, and then you could see the results. So if you said, hey, do you want me to talk about powerlifting? Do you want me to talk about speed training? Or do you want me to talk about mental toughness? And you'll see the percent of what people want. And then whatever's popular is what, you know, what they want most. The people following you is where you should go with it. And I always tell people the easiest way I tell people about this is when I had injured my shoulder and then like my back, and I was basically all like fucked up and injured. I was blogging like crazy about body weight training, my own experiences with it, other videos, just constant body weight stuff. And there was such a like a hyper response. There was a lot of emails coming back to me. There was a lot of comments that it just showed to me that, yes, they are so hungry for this body weight stuff. This is what they want. So, to be honest, I can't remember if I asked them if I should create a bodyweight program for them, but I know that from just...
You had enough of a response.
Yeah, and it wasn't just a couple times. I was blogging for months because I remember saying to myself, saying to my email list and on the blog that I don't know if I'll ever, like, pick up a barbell again, you know, because my body was just going through some, like, weird phase where it was like rejecting the barbell. It was so weird. So it was for months, and the response was constantly high, constantly positive. So I went and created the Bodyweight Bodybuilding program, and it was I think it was probably one of the best sellers I ever had. And it was just, you know, that just is how I go about creating a product. So that's also a lot of times people ask that ploy. They go, how do I know when I'm ready to create a product? Not meaning, like, I think what they're asking is it okay for me to create a product? You know, like, do I have the permission to do it even if I've only been running a gym for so long? Or do I need to have, like, these certain things done in my life and in my business before creating a product? I created my first ebook. It was called, like, the Gladiator Training Program. I think I had that thing out. I was still living with my parents. Yeah, I was still living with my parents because I was selling it for $19.95, and I was training athletes out of my backyard, out of my parents' backyard. So back then, I mean, I just went out and did it. So there was no, I had to own a gym, I had to have trained 50 people, or I had to have been in this business for a year. Like, what would you say to somebody that's saying, when is it okay to create a product?
Well, just to kind of echo your first thing about surveying and asking people what they want, we had experiences like that too in our baseball business. Even things that we think they need, you know, it's not ultimately what they want sometimes, and you kind of have to listen to your market. And then, and I had an early teacher that said the best way to get someone's thinking is AQAL, ask questions and listen. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. And that's ultimately what it is. Now, it doesn't mean that you ignore what they need. You know, our baseball people, they want specific things. And sometimes what they want is not what they need, but we will give them what they want. And then once they get in, then it's our job now to really educate them and instruct them on what they know, what we know they need just from experience. But for the product thing, I would just say this. Do you think when Pearl Jam made their first album and it was a huge hit, their first record, do you think they said, you know, maybe we shouldn't make this record because there's so many bands that have been, like, out and that haven't done as well, and, you know, they're in bars and playing and touring, and we're just a band, it's our first record, we probably shouldn't even make this record, you know, because we don't want to offend those people. No, they got in there and they were like, you know, musicians and athletes, you know, you get rookies who come on in athletics, and they don't want to say, oh, maybe I shouldn't play hard this year because there's other guys in the league that have been around longer and I don't have the right to. No, you know, Derek Jeter, he came to the Yankees, he played his balls off. Pearl Jam played their balls off, you know, and there's no permission or anything. It's when you're ready, you know. So if the Yankees pull up Derek Jeter a year sooner, he probably doesn't do well. If Pearl Jam records that album maybe 2 years earlier, maybe they're not that great of a group. I would say if you've got the thought in your head that you can do it, you're probably ready. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't need some tools, you don't need some education. You know, I'm sure Pearl Jam was great at their instruments before making that record, but they still need a producer, you know, someone to do their album cover art, someone to mix the tracks, someone to engineer their recordings, you know, and someone to manage their business. So there's a lot of things, you know, so putting a product together is not just when you're ready. You know, you're going to need a site, you're going to need some basic sales stuff. You don't need John Carlton type sales abilities, but you need some, and that you can easily get that in bookstores for under $20. And you know, you need maybe some light graphics, and you don't have to go crazy, but there's some things you need, you know, and you got to make sure that what you're putting out is quality. And if you have the thought, you're probably ready, and now it's time to assemble kind of the things you need in place. You know, so they may look at you and, you know, you have the ability to like no one I've ever seen, you know, point a camera at you and you can talk and it comes out just like you're talking regularly. Not many people have that ability. That's something that some people may have to develop, even if you make a good product, you know, may have to, you know, develop some of that ability to talk on camera and stuff like that to sell their stuff. So I would say no, Pearl Jam didn't wait for everybody else and Pearl Jam didn't really give a shit probably what Nirvana or the Rolling Stones or anybody else thought.
Right.
You know, they were just, you know, actually one of the best bands I always thought was completely, in your face, unapologetic was Oasis. Remember Oasis?
The one dude was nuts. What was it? Noel?
They were all nuts.
Or they were so, it was so funny.
They were like, you know, in interviews, they were like, well, how's it going? The guy's, well, it's tough being in the greatest rock and roll band in the world. Yeah, and they were like, you know, they were like, well, next week we'll probably be playing bigger gigs than this. I can't imagine. You know, but it was just kind of, they were just so unapologetic about it. And, you know, it's kind of.
Dude, they had balls. That's what they had. I remember seeing.
Yeah, and that's what it takes.
Yes,
yeah.
It takes. You need some big-ass balls. People, you got to be running around with some big balls. Dude,
we can't even walk sometimes, right? We can't even walk.
Can't walk. It's just out of control. Dude, I remember watching one of the brothers from Oasis getting interviewed. I know they had split up, and it was so long ago. And I mean, it was on MTV, and I remember they were interviewing him, and he kind of got bored with the interview, and they were at the MTV studios in Manhattan, which is, it's like a big window in Times Square, so you're looking outside. So they're like interviewing him, and he just like gets up, turns away, and starts like looking out the window as if he's
I remember that.
He's like, what the fuck is with this boring-ass interview you're giving me? I'm just going to look around outside. And the guy was just like thrown for it. And there's definitely something to say for with that being said, there's something to say with, I don't know if I want to call it shock factor, but you must be, how do you say, you can't, this is I guess going back, like you just can't copy, you can't be the same old same old as everybody else. So it's got to be, obviously when you are yourself, you got to truly let that personality go out. And that's why I tell people, like, be careful with visiting a million and one blogs, because you will get influenced to try to be like those guys or those girls, whoever you're, you know, following. Well, I think you got to, you know, really break the rules. I look at, there's these girls that blog, and they created a group called Girls Gone Strong. And so they broke the mold where, what does every woman ask when they go to a gym? They're like, oh, I don't want to get bulky and huge and lose my femininity. And here you have these girls that could deadlift 200, 300 pounds. They're beautiful and they're ripped and they're feminine. So they really, they broke the mold and they started picking up a lot of traction. I don't know, you know, exactly what they do. I know they were doing like traveling, I don't know if it was like seminars or whatnot, but basically, like, if those girls wanted to put out, you know, a product, it would be huge, because they really just, you know, they made it a very, they made a really strong point of who they are and what they do. Like, they're on Facebook, they're on Twitter, they're on YouTube, they use photos, so they use images, they use videos. So they put their voice out there, which is very much like what Paulie's saying. Don't be afraid to connect and reach out to people on a regular basis. So, and then I guess the thing that's obviously going to make you good is being you and standing out from others and just making sure you don't fit in to the same mold as everybody else. Because especially in this industry, it's so easy to get caught up in looking like everybody else.
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot to say for being, you know, to being yourself. You know, you and I are kind of like opposites with our online presence. You know, where you do a lot of like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and a lot of videos and stuff like that. And it's just, that's just not me, you know, to do that stuff. You know, I mean, it just doesn't flow for me. That's all stuff that works and people should do it if that's what fits for them. But, you know, we're talking like one of our competitors, kind of friendly competitor in a way. And he just said, you know, I see your numbers and I see what you're doing. He goes, but I don't see you like all over the place. And I don't understand how you're beating everyone. And I thought about that for a couple of days. And our philosophy, we kind of have our heads down. We're working, and we kind of beat everyone on creativity, on new angles of products. We really we listen a lot to our customers, and we're working. We're working those things that work for us. So for me to think about like Facebook and Twitter posts for a day, I mean, I don't think I do anything that's very Twitter worthy, But where other guys are out there kind of, that's their thing, that's fine. And that's how people can succeed in one way. But I feel like some of the competition we have, they feel they need to do those things. So they waste a lot of time doing them. And it's just not right for them. If it's right for you, it's right for you. Some people
strategic.
Are great Twitter.
Yeah,
some people are great Twitter people. They come up with funny stuff several times a day, good posts. And, but so you do have to be yourself. And for us, it kind of, it's my company, so all the employees, we kind of flow with the same kind of quiet, just kind of let's work on creating awesome shit all the time and never get off of that, that kind of, let's not get distracted by something when our thing is that, that's us being us.
Right.
Where you Twitter, Facebook and stuff like that, it just comes naturally.
Yeah.
Even when I'm with you sometimes, I'll come home and you'll have tweeted or Facebook like three things. I'm like, oh man, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, so you're following. So you're following,
I'm stalking
me on Facebook.
I'm watching.
I just what I always say to myself, I'm like, man, it must be like from teaching at the elementary level, it's like you're always kind of like that entertainer. You're always trying to entertain the kids.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm always in this like speaking mode, and that's just me being me. And I do catch myself saying, man, maybe I shouldn't put another Facebook post out there, let these people read that. But I always remind myself, just be you, because when you try to deny who you are, and I actually just bought a book. I bought the audio book because I listen to it when I drive. It's with Russell Simmons, and I think it's called Do You, like just being yourself. I'm excited to listen to that. And I think that, on the flip side, I think in our own industry, people tend to listen to a lot of the same business people, the same marketers. It's good to really to get outside of the, I guess, like the typical educators. But, I like, get engaging on Facebook and Twitter, but it's strategic, meaning the reason why I use it is because I see that's where a lot of traffic comes from, and I just see how people, what are you working out while we're doing this thing?
No, I was moving it out of the way.
I mean, this guy's like house cleaning and working out while we're doing this.
Well, I got to get the important things in.
I know. It sounds like you're breathing heavy because you haven't like cleaned for so long.
No,
like,
I was like,
it's like
I was like,
effort work for it. It's like squats.
It was
like
the rug. It was the rug. There's like little, those little lint things on your rug.
It's like doing cleaning the house for you is like doing a set of 20 rep squats for the people listening.
Yes. Or but I just gotta watch I don't cramp. I don't pull it.
You can throw out your back doing that stuff. So what I want to tell you guys is whatever you do, be strategic about it. So if you're going to do a blog post, then the blog post should be leading to something if they want to learn more information about it. So if you're talking about if you're talking about speed training, and then at the end of your blog you link people to something that doesn't have anything to do with speed training, then that's you don't want to do that. At the end of the blog, you should be linking them to a product, something that you have that makes them better at that. So same thing with the Facebook and with the Twitter. Everything is very strategic, meaning if I'm putting out, like this morning I put out a photo of me, daddy's on the phone, it's 2:18.
Okay.
Yeah, I love you, dude. I'm going to go to pick up Summerson. Guess who's on the phone? Uncle Paulie. Oh, God, kid's crazy. So this morning when I put out that photo of the deadlift, it said, if the weight doesn't go up, And then under it, it says, be responsible, get stronger. And what I'm doing there with those photos is I'm really motivating, inspiring people that strength is important. If you're not strong enough, it means you must take action and find a way to get stronger. So when that means, you know, in essence, it's me saying, listen, go and read the blog post. Go and get this. Go and get this training course for me, so you know, so you are responsible and taking responsibility to get yourself stronger. Now, speaking of products, right? Dude, it's 2:20. Relax, Daddy's on the phone. What kind of business is going on in this house?
Yeah, that's my man. That's my man right there.
That's the little guy. So, you put out various training courses for your business, for the baseball business. I started doing a little bit more of that, whereas I see other people are very successful. They don't put out a whole lot of new stuff, but they have a lot of people or they have strong affiliates who regularly promote their stuff. So what's your take on how frequently somebody should create a product, things like, you know, I don't know, just questions. But I don't know what I'm trying to ask you, but what frequency and what type of product should it be? I think people are definitely learning or definitely leaning more towards simple things. Whereas back in the day, remember when you would buy a product, you could literally get, like, this is no joke, guys, 60 or more bonuses. Like, you'd send your receipt and you'd get, like, all these crazy ass special reports. Remember that? And you'd actually buy, you'd buy the product to get one of those special reports. They'd send you to a download page. There's like 60 freaking little e-books. It was insane. And now, you know, we're more streamlining stuff, and people like it. We're selling, boom, here's like a quick list. For example, I would pay more money. I bought a course that was like $1,700. It was on sale. And it was every week we were on the phone for 4 hours, and I think it was 6 weeks. It may have been 8 weeks. And I told the guy, I go, dude, I would have paid you probably more money if you would have given me a 10-point checklist telling me what to do. So what do you think about how frequently to create products, as well as, you know, should these be big, large-scale products? What should they be?
Well, you can run it successfully either way, because we did. We ran for years, and you know this, but basically we ran for years with one product, which is just the 90-mile-per-hour club. And we would create little sub-products, but nothing, like, structured. I mean, our main thing was that. And then for another good 2 or 3 years, we had two products, with 90-mile-per-hour club, Load to Explode.
Oh, you got crazy there. You did two products.
We got crazy. We doubled it. Doubled that shit. And, you know, and that was great. And you can do that. You can do that with a singular message. But what we found was that the same thing you said, that our 90-mile-per-hour club product was gigantic. It was huge. You know, it was everything a pitcher could need, right? But the problem is this. When you see, and there was an ethical issue for me, right? I wanted to give them everything that I knew in my heart they needed to succeed. So I couldn't just break out one piece that they wanted. So I couldn't sell them, like, drills without selling them strength training, too, because I know that the drills are useless unless you have the right training. So I felt like I needed to sell them everything. But the problem with that was the product became so huge that there's no way people could be going through. It was like 17 hours of video at
just
some point.
Overwhelms them.
Yes. So what they would do is, let's say they wanted to learn how to throw a curveball, they would go in there and they'd pick out the curveball video and they'd watch it and then they'd return it. You know, they return the product. So when we have this huge product, it can work. Not saying it's wrong, can work. And it was really successful, but you're relying on the customer to go find themselves in the product, right? So they have to go finding, searching for what they need. So I used to say another lifetime ago, I used to help authors. I worked for a publisher kind of on like a contract basis, where I would take an author who had a book or didn't have a book or whatever, and I'd help him get his book, write his book, ghostwrite it, and get it ready to go. So I was kind of like, I was a kind of a closer for them. I would take the guy and get the book out of him and get it done. And so one of the things I would say to people was, you know, let's say you had a hitting book, and this is one guy I did work with literally sat across the table from me and slid 600 typewritten pages over to me and said, this is the greatest book ever written on hitting.
Okay.
And I said, that might be true, but no one's going to read it. It's 600 pages.
Too much.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's also not only, because one of the things with bookstores was it wasn't only just your book. It was where your book stacked up against other books on the bookshelf. So with hitting, if this guy puts this book there, he wasn't a name coach. He was a name to me because I'm in the industry, but he wasn't a name to like a dad coaching his kid in Little League. But so he's up against Mike Schmidt, Hall of Famer, Don Mattingly, pretty much, you know, should be a Hall of Famer. Dusty Baker, one of the best managers in baseball. Ted Williams, greatest hitter of all time. All their hitting books are there, and there's Joe Schmo's hitting book. But if Joe Schmo comes out with, if we take that hitting book, and what we eventually did was how to hit a curveball. So now, in all those other hitting books, it teaches you how to hit a curveball. But you have to go buy the books, and then you have to go find it. What you want to do is you want to go find your customer and then, you know, deliver the product. So now if I'm little Johnny's dad and Johnny struck out on a curveball three times because he moved up to the big field, now all of a sudden I'm in the bookstore hitting, how to hit a curveball. Boom. It's not even a decision.
Meaning, I mean, I guess we could say that's niche. That's like a niche product. It's just more.
Yeah.
It's more dialed in.
Yeah, and like we've talked about there was you know guys that we subscribed to their newsletters and stuff like that, and I think we were both up to about the same amount of money per month. It was like $1,000 a month almost we were paying, when we would pay the same amount just to put it on one page for me, just give me the things that I need to know, and that's where we mistake the value information. That the value information is sometimes in the bulk of it, but. Well, here's another example. One of our good friends made a product that had 250 exercises in it, right? It had like a 100-page manual.
Right.
It was like 5 DVDs. It was like 6 hours long. And they could only get $97 for it. Because 4 DVDs and a manual, it's hard to get more than that unless you're really doing, you know, especially if you're talking about this kind of market. You know, sports, fitness type thing. You know, if it's money making, you could get more. But we did a survey at one of the last seminars. We said, okay, well, what if that was a product that was like the 25 best exercises, the key ones, the real key ones. And it was a 20-page manual that showed you more in depth and coaching points and stuff like that. Would you pay $47 for that? And everybody said, yeah, we paid $47. So basically, for 10% of the volume of the big product, they got half the price for delivering only 10%.
Yeah.
Not because they're screwing their customer. It's because why they would pay $47 for that is because now they got 25 exercises. I know I can watch that sucker in like an hour. I don't have to invest 4.5 hours in reading 100 pages. So what you're really doing is you're making it easier for them to take in the information.
Yeah, the last product, I did the same thing. You helped me with it, and I said, man, I think I just gave them too much stuff, and they may have been just like, man, it's just too much. So, you know, I feel like we
here's
just,
a great example.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Let me give you another one. Our coach for SealFit was Brad McLeod, right?
Right.
So Brad's working on a little product about how to prepare for a Kokoro type camp.
Right.
Right? It's going to be small, but hey, a month ago or a month and a half ago, we would have bought that, you know, make it $100, doesn't matter. We're in the middle of this thing and we're ready to go in a few weeks. And, you know, he had the information. It doesn't matter how long it is because one, you know, we know that it's just, you know, if it was a 20-page book on how to properly prepare,
maybe would have been great.
Maybe one line of that book. You know, like I wish I, looking back on it, I wish I had done more sprinting.
You know, it's funny, and if I think that's a point that people should make when they're selling a program is that you got to remind people that there could be one thing in there that's worth, that could be the value of the entire program. So,
sprinting is in. he talks about in this product how important sprinting is to, you know, to be able not only just to run distance, because we trained for that, we got that, but we didn't do, that was the one part we were all a little short on, was we didn't realize we were going to have to run long distance real fast. And I wish, and that was in there. So had I had that product, we would have been better prepared.
Yeah. And he could say, you know, it's you know, when people come to your course, you want to be able to say the right things at the right time that will get them. So one thing, like in business, like right now I'm promoting a writing course. It's for blogging. It's for getting into the magazines. And they put it on sale at $97. So the one thing I keep saying is $97 is probably like maybe half of what one member pays you per month. So all you need to do is pick up one new client from this, and it's already doubled. And just saying those things gets into the head of the person and gets them to understand, because sometimes people might just look at the price. What we need to focus on when you're presenting people with whatever you're selling is, what's the benefit? You know, what Alan Koshko goes, he goes, everybody loves that radio station, WIIFM. What's in it for me?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when you're creating stuff, make sure it's all about what's the benefit. How's it going to help them? It's really not about, it's not about you. You could certainly have your story behind it, but your story has to carry into, you know, how it relates to them and how it's going to help them. So let's,
yeah. And here's one more thing on that. Yeah. What you kind of want to look for, and this sounds weird, this sounds harsh, but we'll explain it, is that you want people that are kind of in crisis. You know, so if you think about, it's not preying on people in a crisis, as long as you're obviously selling good stuff. But, you know, we have an injury course, a pitching injury course that we can't sell every day if we wanted to. But the minute one somebody gets injured, they will empty out their bank account to get to get that fixed, to get their injury fixed. So if you're still with weight loss, or you know, a skinny guy needs to add bulk, or a wrestler needs to cut down weight, or a runner needs to cut down their speed or increase their vertical, you don't want the person that has, you're not going to get the person that has an awesome vertical. You want the guy that just went to a football combine, his vertical and his 40 time weren't enough, and he needs to shave it, and he's got 6 weeks. That's your customer, because that's the guy you can help. You know, we want the people that need help, because that's what our products ultimately do. You know, they're not entertainment, you know, so it's not like a, you know, so if we're selling diet stuff, you don't want, you want people who are overweight, you know, because if they're in crisis, that you can solve their problem. That's the greatest thing we can do, you know, is help people that are in trouble.
And that's what you're doing. Yeah. And that's how you got to look at your, I think some people have a bad, like a stigma attached to, like, oh, I shouldn't create a product, or it's just like they feel like something's like negative about it. Yet here we are in our everyday lives. We buy books to read and learn from other people, or to get inspired. We do all these things. And let's close out with this, because I'm going to be running to go pick up my daughter. And let's close out with something real important that you and I, since the conference, we've learned so much, and we've both worked around some big name people. And you and I really been getting into, you know, we spoke about Live the Code at the conference, but we really expanded it. And one of the big things is the honesty. And truly being who you are, or doing what you say you're going to do, these things will always come around to bite you in the ass. And I've worked with some people that portray to be somebody online when in the real world, that's not who they are. And because of that, their business doesn't thrive, and then eventually it gets to a point where it won't survive, because the foundation of your business is all based on just being honest, being in having integrity. So if you're going to create something, make it a fucking awesome product. Make it a 10-star product. I don't really know what else to say. You know, honesty is just tell the truth. If you make a mistake, go back and fix it. That's it. You know, what do you got to say about this as like a closing?
It goes back to everything we were saying. You know, don't do Facebook if you've got to force it.
Yes.
So, like, for me, I would be forcing it if I had to do it. You know, so I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stick with what I do best. And does that mean I'm maybe walking away for some business on Facebook? Yeah, probably. But not. But there's not if it's business that I've got to like completely struggle and strain for. That's not going to be a good long-term strategy. So just like, you know, creating some kind of character online or trying to copy somebody else, and we've seen guys do it. They make fools of themselves. They lose so much credibility. You know, we had that one guy we saw, you know, a while back, basically just steal someone's stuff, and it spread through our little community like within 10 minutes, and that guy just lost all kinds of credibility. And, you know, just be, yeah, I mean, it's everything we're saying, be yourself, do the things that are going to come naturally to you. And the biggest thing I would say too is surround yourself with people that are going to tell you the truth, you know, are honest. And, you know, there's a lot, I see a lot of people out there kind of will deal with dishonest people for money. It's just never a good long-term strategy. You know, don't step over dollars to pick up pennies. You know, think long-term, think marathon, honesty, integrity, surround yourself with good people, make products, things that you're an expert at and that you know can help people who need help. Boom.
Boom,
son. What's up now?
That's
Zach Evanish, crazy kids.
Take care.
Comb your hair.
The one thing about Paulie is he can do a good imitation of me on YouTube. So, guys, I really hope everybody enjoyed this and you enjoyed the audios from the conference. And I think that I think to get them to sink in, it's good to go back and listen to some of them. Don't be afraid to listen to some of them many times. I've done that. Whenever I'm influenced by a certain audio interview, I've listened to some CDs in my car to the point of just like wear and tear on them. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's it, man. I hope everybody enjoyed this. Paul, you want to Paulie runs a program, GFGI. I don't know when the next one's going to be. So it's like, I guess the way to find out about it would be, I have no clue.
They can just hit us up on Facebook. We don't even know when the next one's going to be.
Nobody really knows, and that's...
sometime in the spring. In the spring.
Awesome. If you guys, those of you listening, many of the attendees are underground strength coaches. If there's room, we would be announcing it in our private Facebook group. And that's it, guys. Thanks so much for being a part of this. It was an amazing first conference. And Paulie really saved the day and really helped organize. We had TC there. So TC's he's legend, man. He lays low, but he's legend. So that's it, man.
Stealth.
He's like he's like the Navy SEAL of technology. All right, man. Paulie, you're the man. Everybody, thank you so much. And Paulie, I'll give you a shout later.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later on.
Peace.